These are the but these are the ideas which are contradicted by our ordinary experience. In ordinary experience, you have no God, you have no life, you have no immortality or no failure. So if you have to go only by ordinary experience, then you have to say that although man aspires for these things, they will not be justified. If you go only by ordinary experience, because ordinary experience contradicts them. These four goals or five goals, or whatever you experience around in the world, there is no God anywhere you see in the world. Normally, you don't experience ordinary world. You don't experience immortality anywhere. You don't experience light everywhere. You don't experience freedom everywhere. In ordinary experience, these are contradictory. So if you are to go only by ordinary experience, then you will never be able to justify these aspirations. But is this contradiction of the ordinary experience the final judge? No. So Sri Aurobindo says that if you really examine the way in which nature has been developing, this is from the cosmological argument, if you look at the way in which the cosmos is developing, you will find a method in it, which you can observe.
Yes.
What is that method? That which nature wants to affirm, ultimately, is first negated. And then gradually that negation is negated, so that you come to affirm it. This is the nature of the method of nature. So, if today we say that ordinary experience contradicts God, you should not feel hesitant in aspiring for God. Why? Because the nature's method is first to present such an experience which will deny you that which is ultimately going to come about in the future. The very method of nature is first denial and then affirmation. Is that really so? This is the question for the earth. Is that really the method? So in the third paragraph, Sri Aurobindo gives examples and says, look, first, there was at one time only matter on this earth. And if at that time, if somebody had to say that in this black, unconscious regime of hard granite, there will bubble out a living organism, people would have said it's impossible. This matter is a denial, a complete contradiction, all the possibility of life. Life is dynamic and pulsating. Matter is inert and no locomotion by itself. Therefore, when life bubbled out of matter, you could then be convinced that nature has a method, that which is its opposite is brought out of its first principle in which that opposition was laid. Similarly, life and mind are quite opposite to each other. Life is blind. Life is irrational. life is wild, life is unorganized, but mind is conscious, organized, it always pursues arrangement, it rejects all irrationality, it rejects all wildness. And yet it is this mind which came out in the field of life. So here was a question of opposites. Life and mind are opposites of each other. And yet it was in the life that mind came out. Similarly, it would therefore not be impossible for us to conclude that that which is opposite to the mind will come out of the mind. That which is half blind, mind is half blind, half, it is half consciousness, half unconsciousness. Out of that will emerge fully conscious, supramental. Not mental, but supramental. So out of the half blindness will emerge full light. That fits in with the whole logical chain. As Sri Aurobindo says, all problems of existence are problems of harmony. Everything in the world tends towards harmonization. Harmonization of opposites. Therefore, if ordinary experience contradicts these higher ideals, then that contradiction should be taken as a sign that this will be harmonized. These three paragraphs complete one set of arguments. Now starts a fourth paragraph with a new argument, but supporting all that has gone before. And here Sri Aurobindo now brings out more prominently the theory of evolution. He says that the modern science, modern knowledge, has put forward the idea of evolution. This idea says that life emerges in matter and mind emerges in life. And mind emerges in life. This is a theory of evolution. But Sri Aurobindo adds, but modern science does not ask the question, why should life emerge in matter and why should mind emerge in life? It only describes this fact, but it does not raise a more fundamental question, why should it so happen? Why should life emerge in matter? And why should mind emerge in life? Can life emerge in matter if life was not at all present in matter? It was within it. Could mind have emerged in life if mind was not present in life? So you might say that therefore we may say that matter itself is veiled life. Is life but veiled. Life is veiled mind. Similarly, now we can say that mind also is a veiled supermind. Therefore, Sri Aurobindo says that it is in this logical chain of evolutionary process we can say that mind contains within itself the supermind. So man, he says, it's a laboratory. Just as the animal was a laboratory in which man was worked out, similarly, man is a laboratory in which Superman is being worked out. This is the end of the fourth paragraph. Then comes the last paragraph. But having shown all this, Sri Aurobindo says that the modern mind today stands at a very important stage in which it is inclined to negate the possibility of the supermind. Modern mind is today raising the most difficult obstacles. These two obstacles particularly are to be noted. One is the obstacle of the rationalist, the materialistic, or even other rationalists. The one is the obstacle of the rationalist, and the other is the obstacle of the religionist. These two words are important in this paragraph. The rationalist says that reason is the highest and there can be nothing higher than reason. So it puts an obstacle. Rationalist says there can be nothing higher than reason. Religionist says that man can worship God, but for man to become divine himself, that's not possible. If you examine the religionist, not religion, the religionist idea, those who want to erect religion as the last and highest pedestal, which denies anything more than religion, their only idea is that you can only worship, but you cannot become. But these two stand in the way, therefore Sri Aurobindo says, that if you examine the matter very impartially, objectively, taking into account all the facts of the universe, you can conclude, particularly when you take into account the experience of some exceptional individuals in the history of the world, then you can be quite convinced that you should not fear to aspire. The aspiration that has been there throughout the history is fully justified. This is the last paragraph, that even though these two obstacles are there, these two obstacles can be rejected in the light of the experience of some of the exceptional individuals of the history of the world. Throughout the history, there have been so many exceptional individuals. Sri Aurobindo gives the analogy of the Northern Lights. If you go to the North Pole, suddenly you will find, even in the darkness night, effulgence of light. Why? Because there is a huge light behind the darkness, which sometimes appears like a miracle. But that is not really a miracle, because the light exists. Sometimes through the darkness it appears. Similarly,
the wheel has broken.
That's similarly, in the case of the human mind, which is a veil, through that veil sometimes exceptional individuals bring the higher light. Therefore, if you make a systematic effort, the veil can be broken and the highest light can be made manifest fully. Therefore, the human aspiration for God, life, freedom, immortality is justified. This is the conclusion of the first chapter. In fact, the entire book is containing this very first chapter. The whole theme of this whole book is given in the very first chapter.